Today is Wednesday, January 30th. We are continuing with Yechezkel, and we are up to Perek Tes Zion, chapter 16. Now this Perek has no fewer than 63 psukim in it. It's a very long Perek. And parts of it are actually quite famous. And I already mentioned that to you last week, that we're going to be discussing some very famous psukim in this parak. Let me give you a general overview of what's going to happen in this parak, and then we'll go through it pasuk by pasuk. Rather than reading through the whole thing, which is taking an inordinately long time, let me give you outside the basic idea, and then we will go through it. Tonight we should be able to do the first 14 psukim. Hashem is going to here tell Yechezkel a mashal. He's going to tell him a parable. And the mashal is going to be about Hashem is going to take the role of a man who finds a baby girl out in the field, abandoned by her mother. And this man is going to take care of the baby girl and first to take care of all the needs of an infant, and then raise this baby girl to adulthood. Once she reaches adulthood, he then marries her and gives her all kinds of items, food, clothing, jewelry, all things to make her beautiful, and anything that she could want. Then she, in turn, takes all those gifts that he has showered upon her, and she uses it for znus, for adultery. And the psukim go on and on about the various forms of adultery that she commits using the gifts that were given to her by the man who took care of her. And eventually Hashem says that as a result there would have to be a punishment. And then the psukim go on and explain some of the punishment that has to take place. And then finally, at the end of the parak, at the end of the chapter, after the punishment is described, then there is a description of the nechama, of the comfort that will happen in the end. Now, clearly the analogy is, it is analogous to Hashem and the Jewish people, where Hashem finds us, and we don't have anything, we are in Mitzrayim, we're in Egypt, and we have nothing. We are slaves. We are defenseless, and no one to take care of us. And He takes us out of Mitzrayim, and not only does He take care of us, but He gives us all that we could possibly need or want, and He feeds us and clothes us and gives us jewelry and money and everything we could possibly need or want. And then we turn around and, using His gifts, we then go and commit avodah zarah. We worship other gods, which is akin to adultery in the mashal, in the parable. So that's what this parak is going to be about. We're going to break it up into parts, and tonight we're going to do, hopefully, the first 14 psukim, which are the psukim, the verses that describe how Hashem finds us and takes care of us. How we were at one point defenseless and had nothing, and then He took care of us. The next part, which is then how we became unfaithful, that we'll save for next week. But tonight, we're going to do the first 14 psukim, which are themselves informative of all that Hashem did for us. Pasuk Aleph. Vayidvar Hashem Elai Le'emor, the word of Hashem was to me, saying, Ben Adam, son of man, Hodayas Yerushalayim es Toavos Seha, make known to Yerushalayim its Toavos, its abominations, its iniquities. This is going to be, as I said, overall, this parak is going to be how we were unfaithful to Hashem. Although what we're going to do tonight is not going to get to that point. V'amartan, you should say, Komar Hashem Elokim liYerushalayim, so says Hashem God to Yerushalayim, Mechorosayich umoldosayich, those who, Mechor is translated as dwelling places, okay, where you lived and where you were born. Me'eret HaKenani, from the land of Canaan, Avicho Amori, your father, the Amorite, the Imech Kitis, and your mother from Chais. We will get back to what this means. Your father and your mother are references to, as you would expect, Abraham and Sarah. And we'll get back to what this means hopefully later on. Omodosayef, and those who bore you, biyom huleves osach, when you were born, lo charas shareich, your navel, the cord, was not cut. And as you were left without the cord being cut. Uvamayim meruchat b'mishi, and in water you were not washed to make you shine. V'hamle'ach lo humlachat, you were not salted. You were not salted. V'hachtel lo chutalt, and you weren't wrapped. This is the description of all that happens when a baby is born. What the midwife would do, which is A, to cut the cord, B, to wash the infant, C, to salt the infant. I don't know what the equivalent of that is today. Perhaps anybody here with more medical training than I would know what goes on. But the Gemara says that that is an essential part of the care of an infant immediately upon birth. And then to wrap the baby properly, because the limbs of the baby are not settled, because after going through the birth process, the limbs become pushed around. And then the baby has to be wrapped properly in order to get the limbs to settle in the right way. This pasuk is actually a famous pasuk, not famous in the sense that everybody knows it, but it's famous in the sense that the Gemara uses this pasuk regarding birth of a baby on Shabbos to know what is mutter to do and what is aser to do. So the Gemara draws from this pasuk those things that are essential to be done for a baby, and those things that are not essential to be done for a newborn infant. It's derived from this pasuk here, and the Gemara there dissects this pasuk to describe what is exactly necessary and what is not. But there are four things being described: the cord being cut, the washing of the baby, the salting of the baby, and the wrapping of the baby. And none of this was done for this young infant girl. Lo chasal ayach ayin, no eye had any pity on you. Lasos lach achas me'ela, to do any of these things for you. Lechumla alayach, to have mercy on you. Vatushlechi, and you were thrown away. El pnei asada, on the face of the field. Begoal nafsheich, in being ignored. B'yom uledes osach, on the day that you were born. Now here is one of the more famous psukim in Yechezkel. Most of you don't know it's from Yechezkel, but it is one of the most famous psukim in Yechezkel. Va'evor alayach, and I passed over you. Va'erech, and I saw you misposeses b'damayich, rolling in your blood. Va'omar lach, and I said to you, b'damayich chayi, in your blood you shall live. Va'omar lach, b'damayich chayi, and I said to you, in your blood you shall live. When do we say this pasuk? At a bris milah. At a bris, this pasuk is said. It's in the bracha of the bris milah. And at this point, when the one who is saying the bracha gets up to this point, he pauses, and all of the tzibur repeats these words, v'omar lach b'damayich chayi, v'omar lach b'damayich chayi, which therefore, clearly, there is an obvious reference to the blood of Mila. We will talk about that presently. Now, the next pasuk ought to be famous to everybody because it's found in the Haggadah. Although it's in a part of the Haggadah that is often read quickly and not too much attention is paid to it, it's in part of the Tzei Ulman that's read in the Haggadah. Revava kitzemach asadeh nesatich. Revava means one who is growing. To blossom. What is the pasuk over there? What is it read over there? For Revava. Huh?
Thrive.
Okay, one who thrives. Kitzemach hasadeh nesatich, I have made you like the like a blossom in the field. Vatirbi, and you increased. Vatigdili, you got older. Vatavoi ba'adi adayim, and you became more beautiful. Shadayim nachonu, usarech tzimeach, various forms of development. Tzimeach is the hair. Va'at erom ve'eriyah, and you were unclothed. You had nothing to wear. So this girl was growing up, but she has nothing to wear. And I passed over you. And I saw that your time is a time of love. And I spread my cloak over you. And I covered your being unclothed. And I swore to you. And I came into a covenant with you. Noom Hashem Elokim. So says Hashem God. Vatihi li, and you were to me. Clearly describing the love that a man has when meeting a woman, and then they become married, or at least they become engaged. Va'erchatzech v'mayim, and I washed you in water. Va'eshtof damayich me'alayich, and I cleaned off the blood from upon you. Va'asuchech b'shamen, and I anointed you with oil. Va'avishech rikma, and I dressed you in rikma. Rikma is beautiful clothing. Va'enaleich takash, and I put shoes on you. Enaleich means I covered your feet with takash, with beautiful shoes. Va'ech b'sheich b'sheish, and I wrapped you in silk. Va'chaseich meshi, and again I clothed you in also. I'm sorry. Yeah, meshi is silk. Sheish is linen, right? Linen, and I covered you with silk. Va'edeich edi, and I beautified you with beauty, which means with jewelry. Va'etzmidim al yadayich, I put bracelets on your hands. Viravid al groneich, and a necklace on your throat. Va'etinezem al apeich, and I put a ring in your nose. Va'agilim al oznayich, and earrings on your ears. Va'ateres tiferes b'rosheich, and a crown of glory on your head. Vatadi zahav vachesef, and you were beautified with gold and silver. Umavusheich, and your clothing sheish vameshi v'rikma was linen and silk. Rikma also another type of material, beautiful material. Soles udvash vashemen achalt, fine flour and honey and oil you ate. Vatifi bimod maod, you became very very beautiful. Vatitzlichi l'mlucha, and you became successful for royalty. And your name went out amongst the nations with your beauty. In other words, you became famous. Because your beauty was complete. With my glory that I put upon you. So says Hashem God. Rashi here tells us that although this is a mashal, and with a mashal you can often go in many directions, Rashi says, Targum Yonasan has a beautiful explanation of this mashal, and Rashi says, and there is no need for any other explanation. There's just one way to go over here, and there's no need to do anything else. Rashi says, let me just read you those words. Rashi says, V'yonasan pirish es kula, Targum Yonasan explained the whole thing. Ve'ein lahosif ala targum, there's no need to add anything to what he said. Ve'ein pirsha, and the following is the way to explain it. The truth is, Targum Yonasan is drawing from the Gemara, and Yonasan Nazir was a Tana, but he's drawing the Gemara itself also goes through this mashal, and I will tell you what the Gemara says in Masechet Saita. But as I told you, the mashal here is about Klal Yisrael when we were in Mitzrayim and we had absolutely nothing. And Hashem came and took us out and clothed us and gave us everything that we need. He gave us food, and He gave us clothing, He gave us wealth, He gave us the Torah, He gave us everything, He gave us mun, He gave us anything we would possibly need, the air, the water, everything. Before we look at how the Gemara describes every detail, let's just look at the mashal first, at the way that the story, the parable, is portrayed here in Yechezkel. Let me point out to you something which I thought was curious. There's a reference to the father and the mother being Kenanim, being Amorim, Chitim, and then how this girl was abandoned. And nothing was done. She was an infant and nothing was done for her. And then Hashem says, I passed over you, over this girl, and I saw you were rolling in your blood. And I said you should live with your blood, you should live with your blood. So, ostensibly, what blood is being spoken about here? In the mashal, I'm not talking about in what we know it's talking about Mila, we're talking about other things, but what is in the mashal, what blood is being spoken of over here? Well, that's going to be the nimshal. That's what we'll say, right? But in the mashal, in the actual story of Yechezkel, what blood is the infant rolling in?
From birth?
You think from birth. The blood from birth, or if there are any cuts on the baby itself, something like that. And the Hashem, who is the man who passes by, says, in your blood you shall live, in your blood you shall live. It's a funny thing to say. What would it, imagine that you're walking along the road, a quiet road, and in the field, off in the distance, you hear something, and you go over and you find a little baby, clearly an infant, just born, it was abandoned, and there's blood all around. Why would you say, in your blood you shall live, in your blood you shall live? It's a funny thing to say. Wouldn't you say, oh, let me help you, let me take you out of here? What does it mean, in your blood you shall live? Before you answer that question, then in Pasuk Zion it describes how this young girl, this baby, then starts to grow up and matures physically, but she has nothing to wear. She's grown up, but she has nothing to wear. She's unclothed. And I passed over you, and I saw that it was your time of love, meaning that I guess that he loves her, and I covered you with my cloak, and I covered your being unclothed, and I swore to you, and I made a covenant with you, says Hashem, and you were mine. Which seems to be like a courtship. But then it says in Pasuk Tes, in verse 9, and I washed you in water, and I cleaned the blood off of you, and I covered you with, and I anointed you with oil. And then it goes on to say how he dressed her. Wouldn't the washing in water and the removing of the blood have already happened before this young girl matured? He found her in the field, in rolling in blood, the blood of, apparently of birth, and he says, in your blood you shall live, in your blood you shall live. And then it doesn't describe how he bathed her or clothed her then. It doesn't say anything about that. It just says, I said to you, in your blood you shall live. Then she matures, but she has nothing to wear, which means she hasn't been clothed yet. Then I passed over you. This is the second time. It already said I passed over you, and I found you, and I said, in your blood you shall live. Then it says, I passed over you. This is the second time, and I saw that your time was a time of love, and then I covered you, and I swore to you, and I took you into my covenant, and you were mine. And then it says, and I washed you and cleaned the blood off of you. Isn't this in the wrong order? Wouldn't you have expected the bathing and the removal of the blood and the clothing to come when he immediately found the baby? And then only later on, after the baby grew up, then there's a courtship, and then there's a covenant, and he swears to her, and she is his. Isn't it a little bit isn't it a little bit out of order? Isn't the sequence a little funny over here? Any ideas? It's definitely poetry. There's no question about it. But what about the sequence of events? There's no question. There's no question. This is a beautiful, it is poetic, and it's a beautiful set of psukim. And the Gemara even makes it more beautiful, as we'll see. But I still want to know what the sequence is before we can get to the Gemara.
I mean, when he washes with water, I'm thinking of mitzvah, actual cleansing.
Okay.
And the washing of the blood would be any impurities that she had from,
okay,
you know, the travails from before. And when it says it, you know, when she was in love, the reason I got to that is because I thought maybe she was up for time.
Okay.
And that's why it's there, and then there's the bathing after she's clothed.
He
had to wait. But not doing it earlier, maybe this baby had to prove that he was going to live.
Say that again.
The baby wasn't washed right away.
You're right.
For whatever reason, the baby had to prove it was strong enough to live.
Oh, had to prove it was strong enough to live. Okay, we'll hold that. Any other ideas? Yeah?
I had an idea that when the baby is born, and it's first born, covered from all blood. So the natural inclination would be messy. No, don't want to touch it. Hashem wants to touch the Jewish people regardless of his condition. And then afterwards, was even willing to take care of it before it was, we weren't cleaned up. He loved us regardless.
Okay. It seems that before we move to Hashem, which we're going to have to do, but it just seems in the mashal, in the parable, that the man finds this little infant rolling in blood, and he says, "In your blood you shall live, in your blood you shall live," which means, this is the way I understand it, what he's saying to her is, "I'm ready to take care of you unconditionally. You don't need to be clean," as Mrs. Cohn just said, "you don't need to be clean in order for me to take care of you. It's not a prerequisite you be washed and clothed for me to take care of you." He takes care of her without any mention of cleaning her. Now obviously in the mushel he's going to clean her up, but a baby is going to get dirty again and dirty again and dirty again and dirty again, etc. And there's a constantly being cleaned and getting dirty and cleaning and getting dirty. That's what babies do. Even young children, etc. That's not required that the child be clean for the parent, or in this case, for the eventual husband, to love that young infant. This would be an adoptive father. Then the baby now grows up and begins to mature, and there's no clothing. Now, there was no clothing at all, but there was no mention of clothing yet, because the clothing wasn't necessary for the love, for the care that Hashem showed, or that the father here shows for this baby. It is not necessary. The clothing is not a prerequisite. The baby is living in its blood. Even with the blood, it will live. Then, when the baby has grown up and now is ready for marriage, now there's a second time where the person who found the baby is now reassessing the situation. First, the person who found the baby took care of the baby as a parent takes care of a child. I found you, you were an infant, an abandoned infant, and I took care of you, I passed over you, which means that I considered your situation, and I cared for you the way a parent cares for a child. And you developed. After you developed, then I considered you a second time. Meaning, I reassessed. It was one thing to raise you. Is what about marriage? That's a whole different relationship. Am I interested in that step? And I saw that, yes, your time of love, it had arrived, meaning that I was ready to take that second step with you to have a different sort of relationship with you. And that's a different consideration. It's a whole different approach, meaning looking at you through a different lens. And at that point, again, before washing you, before rinsing the blood off, before clothing you, I put my cloak over you, and I swore to you, and I brought you into a covenant with me, and you are mine. I made you into my wife, again, unconditionally. You became my wife. It didn't require the washing. It did not require the rinsing of the blood. It didn't even require the dressing. It just required that there would be a covenant. That's the only part of it. Now, a covenant is different than when he found the baby. A covenant implies a two-way street. A baby obviously can't be expected to go have a covenant. An infant can't have a covenant with its parent. The infant has no choice. The infant has no free will and has no ability anyway to have a covenant. A covenant is a two-way street. So the original love that is shown by this man is really unconditional, which means there's no expectation of any reciprocation. Later, when he reconsiders her position, and now he says, now I'd like to make it a marriage. Now I brought you to me, and I swore to you, and I brought you into a covenant with me. A covenant means that there's agreement on both sides, and you are mine. So when I say unconditional love, it wasn't unconditional that it wouldn't be reciprocal, but it was not conditional on getting anything out of it other than the reciprocal love. That's all that was expected. This man loves this young girl to the point where he wants to marry her without any expectation of getting any benefit out of the marriage other than reciprocal love. That's the only requirement. There's got to be a bris. There's got to be a covenant. It's got to be a two-way street. You don't have to be clean. You don't have to have the blood red stuff. You don't have to be clothed. You don't have to be beautiful. You don't have to have jewelry. Nothing. That's not necessary. All I'm asking is we have a reciprocal love. That's it. Once that covenant is established, then Hashem moves on, and then the mashal moves on. How I bathed you, and I rinsed the blood off of you, and I clothed you, and I gave you beauty, and I gave you clothing, and I gave you everything in tune to gold and silver, and fine flour, and oil, and honey, etc., 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 and a crown, and I made you the envy of everybody else. But that's not conditional on the love. The love is not dependent on that. Yes?
It could be that's why
already in Pasuk Ches, in verse 8, it ends off Ne'um Hashem Elokim. So says Hashem God. And it's already over there. This is not a strict case of mashal, nimshal, of parable. Usually with the parable you get the straight parable, and then there's no mention of what it's comparing itself to, and then at the end then the Navi will say, and this is this, and this is that, etc. Over here, throughout the mashal, even though obviously it's meant to have this parable of a man and a woman, etc., but Hashem throws himself in over there in Pasuk Ches, which seems out of place. If you're just presenting a mashal, don't bring up the fact that it's Hashem. So it could be because of your point, because we want to remove that aspect of it. I don't know. No, it does not always have to be the blood. Although that is a strong covenant. A covenant, blood always represents life itself. Like a covenant of life and death. So blood is always that aspect. I mean, we get married all the time without a covenant of blood. But that is that's obviously a very strong sign of covenant.
So if you take this away, I can't see all the Jewish people in this, and I don't see this big this is great love of Hashem for us.
So he just wants to give and give and flowers and flowers, and we have to be watching one, and we have to cure, you know, who wants to cure by it. He just has his hands open and giving. And then I ask myself, why the blood? And if you think there's a Jewish people itself, there's no more baby involved in this thing. So what is that? Okay, so we're going to move to the in a moment. We'll talk about the blood. But one more aspect of the blood, not what you brought up, but just another aspect of it, is that the way I explained it was that the love of the parent is unconditional. I'm going to love you despite the fact that you have the blood all around you. But the other way I understand it, the damayich chayi is actually a little stronger than that. In your blood you shall live sounds like because of your blood you shall live. Because of the fact that you are rolling in blood, that's why you shall live. Using that approach, it would seem then that the man who finds this infant is moved by seeing the infant rolling in blood. It says, because of the fact that you're rolling in blood, that's why you're going to live. The reason why I feel for you is because I see your plight. If I would have seen you and you would have been fine, okay, in the hospital, everybody taking care of you, etc., I wouldn't have had any interest in you. But because I see how much you need and how much you lack, because of the blood, that's why you're going to live. B'damayich chayi, b'damayich chayi. In your blood you shall live. Because of your blood you shall live. Not despite the blood, but because of the blood. Now, yeah.
Until she was full grown and then all.
all of a sudden noticed her and wanted to marry her. But almost as if she was like a wild thing. She just grew up in the field. And now he sees her again. So now he wants to marry her. So then it makes sense that he would meet her and give her beautiful clothes.
Okay. Okay. Although the way you said it when you started your question is that I have made you like the blossom in the field. So apparently the man is facilitating the growth of this girl. But you're right, it does seem like it's a little bit distant. It's not that she's in his home growing up, but that he is still facilitating the growth of the baby. He's watching, making sure that things are okay with her, but that she is outside of where he is. That does seem that way in the muscle. I agree with you.
I can also understand as far as blood test, that if my dad was blood, it might be expected under the circumstances, if you just stick with the muscle itself, that he would find a dead thing. The fact that she was still alive, like, then he would, a person, let's say not God, but a person, might say, this is a sign, the fact that she's alive, her blood is a sign of the fact that she would be strong, she'll be able to withstand.
Okay, similar to what somebody mentioned before, that it kind of proves that she is a viable child, that she'll be able to withstand the hardships. Okay, very good. The Gemara in Sota. This is a beautiful Gemara that goes through this mashal, and it's a well known Gemara, not the entire mashal. I'm going to have a little trouble reading this over here, but we're going to try our best. But the beginning of the Gemara is one that you are familiar with, which the Gemara says, "Darish Rav Avira, Rav Avira Darshan expounded, Bischar Nashim Tidkanios Shahayu Ba'oso Hadar, in the merit of the righteous women that lived in that generation, meaning in Egypt, Nigalu Yisrael Mitzrayim, the Jews were redeemed from Egypt." You all know that we say that we were only redeemed because of the righteous women. And that is part of the reason why the Pesach Seder is equally required for men and for women, where even though it's a mitzvah satei shazman grama, it's a time-bound positive mitzvah, it's a commandment, nevertheless, and usually women are not obligated to do those mitzvahs, but the Pesach Seder, because of Apein Hayuvos Sahanes, the women are just as obligated as men. And one of the explanations is because of this Gemara, because the women are the ones who really facilitated the fact that we were redeemed. Now, the simple meaning of that is, and the Gemara is going to go through it, is that if it wasn't for the women, then the Jewish people would have ceased to exist. Because under a slave, under a slave existence, the way the Jews were enslaved, and the incredible avodas perach, the hard labor we were under, the constant hard labor we were under, there was no room for procreation. The Jewish people would have ceased to exist simply from exhaustion. Even though the Egyptians were not actively killing us, although many people died from the work, but that was not their aim, with the exception of throwing the babies into the river, of course, but their aim was to work us. We were their slaves. But it was such a difficult labor, then no one had any time, interest, or strength to be involved with having children. And the women recognized that if this were to go on, the Jewish people would cease to exist without any help from Paro, just because no one would have any children. And so the women took it upon themselves, despite their own exhaustion and their own hard labor, they took it upon themselves to ensure that we would continue. Now, you all know that's an incredible sacrifice, because it's hard enough to be under hard labor when a woman is not pregnant or just having had a baby. And the women took it upon themselves, despite the fact they knew it would be much more difficult being pregnant and having children. Nevertheless, they went and did it anyway. And what did they do? So the Gemara tells us, Bishah Shaholchos Lishov Mayim, when they went to go draw water from the well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mazmin Lahem Dagim Kitanim Bekadehen, Hashem would bring about for them small fish, small fish in their jugs. The jugs they would use to fill up the water, small fish would come up in the jugs also besides water. Kosher small fish, fish that were not normally found in the wells, they would come up. The Gemara tells us that small fish, I don't know what species of fish the Gemara is talking about, but the Gemara says that small fish are extremely healthy and give a lot of strength to the body. The Shavos mechza, mayim mechza dugim. They would draw half water and half fish. Ubos, and they would come. The Sobsos shtek deros, and then they would boil two pots. Achas shal chamin, one would be hot water, the achas shal dugim, and one would be of fish. Umolichos etzel balei, and then they would carry these two pots, one of water and one of fish, to their husbands, lasada, in the field. Umarchitzos osan, they would bathe their husbands with the hot water. Vesochos osan, they would anoint them. Umachilos osan, they would feed them the fish. Umashkos osan, and give them to drink. Vinizakos lahen bein shvasayim, and they would find a private area there in the field where they would have a relationship. And then, and it cites another pasuk for that, I'm skipping that pasuk that it cites, not our pasuk. Just 1 minute, let me see if I can find where it ends over here. Goes on to talk about the wealth. Hold on. The kivan she mis abros, and when they would become pregnant, both the batim, they would come to their homes. The kivan she magia zman moldehen, when the time to give birth would come, holchos, they would go, the yoldos basade, and they would give birth in the field, tachas atapuach, under, the tapuach literally means the apple or the tree. That's where they would give birth. As the pasuk says in Shir HaShirim, Tachas HaTapuach Or Articha Shama Chiblascha Imecha, that they would give birth under the trees. And then they would leave them. The women couldn't stay there. They had work to do. The Egyptians would kill them if they wouldn't come home. V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sholeach Mishmei Marom, and Hashem would send from the heavens Mi She just can't read this word. Mi she mankir umashpir osam, someone that would clean them and beautify them. That's what it's menaka. Menaka umashpir osam, to clean them and beautify them. Kechaya zu, like a wild animal. She mishaferes es havlad. I'm sorry, not a wild animal. Like this midwife. Chai calls me a midwife. Like this midwife that beautifies the child, and it brings a pasuk for that. And the pasuk it brings is the pasuk, one of the pasuk we just read. Umoldosayach biyom huledes osach. This is the pasuk. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4. Umoldosayach biyom huledes osach. Lo charas shareich uvamayim leluchat v'mishi, etc. That none of these things were done for you. No one took care of you. No person did. But Hashem sent someone from upstairs to take care of these children, to cut the cord, to bathe them, to salt them, and to wrap them. Umilakim lahem shnei agulim, and he would pick for them two agulim, two clusters. Echad shel shemen ve'echad shel dvash, one of honey and one of oil and one of honey, as the pasuk says, vayinikim dvash mistela v'shem v'chamish tzur. V'kivan shemakirin bahen mitzrim, and when the Egyptians discovered these children growing in the fields, bayin lahargan, they came to kill them. The Egyptians weren't interested in these children growing in the fields. V'nasen lahem nathan, and a miracle happened for them. V'nivloin bakarka, they were swallowed up in the ground. U'meivin shvarim, and then the Egyptians would bring oxen. V'charshin algaban, and they would plow the field above these children that were buried in the ground. And it brings a pasuk for that. La'achar shahochen, after the Egyptians would leave, hayu mevatz betzin v'yotzin ke'esef hatzada, they would blossom and come forth like the grass of the field. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, the pasuk we have, pasuk Zion, verse 7, revava ketzemach hasaden esatich, like the blossoms in the field I have put you, and you grew up in the field after having been plowed over by the Egyptians. And that the Gemara brings this pasuk. And later on, when Hashem revealed Himself on the Yam Suf at the Red Sea, Heim Hikiruhu Tchila. These children recognized Hashem first. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Zeh Keli Ve'anvehu. This is my God, and I will glorify Him. These children who had had first-hand knowledge of the kindness and the mercy of Hashem, when Hashem revealed Himself at the Yam Suf, they were the first ones to jump up and say, Zeh Keli Ve'anvehu. This is my God, and I will glorify Him. This is what the Gemara says happened in Mitzrayim, and that is what our psukim are talking about over here. Now, we have to do two things. We have to understand what the Gemara says, then we have to connect it back to what's going on in Yechezkel. How do we understand the greatness of the women? I understand, as I already explained, that they took upon themselves a very difficult task, where they were already overworked, already exhausted, already under tremendous pressure and strain, and they still took it upon themselves to make sure that Jewish people survived. And they, as I said before, they were willing to become pregnant and have children, knowing what it would do to them. It would weaken them and make it more difficult. But you see from the Gemara more than that, that they went and they really managed to get their husbands to be a part of what they wanted to do, when under normal circumstances, the husbands would never have done it. The husbands were exhausted. The husbands were overtaxed, overburdened in the fields. And the women went to the fields carrying the water and carrying the food and bathed the husbands and fed the husbands and made them able to also participate in what had to be done. Now, Hashem made a nes for them. Hashem made the fish come up in the water. So, they didn't do it all themselves, but they couldn't have done it all themselves. There was no place to get fish. They weren't given small fish by the Egyptians. The Egyptians weren't interested in feeding us well when we were in Mitzrayim. Certainly not something that's so healthy that will make everybody strong and healthy. And so the Hashem, when the women put their minds to doing this, Hashem gave them the wherewithal to do it. Because the women decided to do it, that's why Hashem gave them not only the strength to do it, but also the means to do it. Then they come and they have a relationship, they become pregnant, then they already have the babies. They can't have the babies at home. The Egyptians will kill the babies. What do? They go out to the field and have the babies and leave. Now, how do we understand that? These women weren't foolish. They knew babies can't survive on their own in the field. What is going through their minds, and apparently a lot of women did this, what is going through their minds to justify such behavior, to go have the baby in the field and then abandon the baby in the field? How can you rely on a miracle?
They did their part, and God did the rest, though it was going to happen again. God wouldn't have wanted that.
We have the covenant. So what did the law just have told us? Hashem said that he could tell on with the place that he's going to take us out. In order for there to be a people to be taken out, there has to be
okay.
Generation.
Okay.
We're just helping God along the path that God told us to go.
Okay,
so
good.
I think it gives you strength if you have something to hope for. It actually gives you strength. It might physically drain you.
Emotionally gives you strength.
But emotionally it gives you the courage to keep going
okay.
on. It gives you a purpose to survive it.
Okay. But there's a key factor here which Mrs. Bogart mentioned. You want to say it a little louder? You said they didn't have a choice. Right? That's the key factor over here. Everybody is correct. If you know you have to do something, you know that it is your job to make sure there's a next generation. Like you said, Hashem is going to take us out. There has to be a people to take out. There's got to be a next generation. And you know that it's your job to make sure there is a next generation, but you can't rely on a miracle. You have to do that which is most likely to succeed. But here they knew there was no way to succeed. There was no way to raise these children. There was no way. There was no way to bring good food to their husbands unless Hashem made an ace. The women put their minds to it, they drew water. Their intention was to draw water and bring water to their husbands, at least to bathe them. They didn't think they'd be able to bring fish to their husbands, but Hashem brought about the fish, so they had the fish. when they became pregnant and then had the babies, when they're ready to have the babies, what are they going to do? They can't have the babies at home because the babies will be killed. They can't have the babies in the field because then there's no one to care for the babies. They chose the better of the two evils. Babies born at home would be killed instantly. Babies born in the field, maybe they'll live a few days. Similar to what one of the most famous women in Mitzrayim did. What did Yocheved do? She put the baby in the water. What's that? What do you mean? How do you expect the baby to survive in the water? Now, we know what happened. We know that the daughter of Paro came and saved Moshe. But that you can't expect that to happen. So the what she did was the only thing that could be done to preserve the baby's life just a little bit longer. Had she kept Moshe at home, Moshe would have been killed that day. So instead, she put the baby in the water and said, okay, that's the best I can do for you. You will now live another day, maybe 2 days. I can't do anything else. And now it's up to Hashem if He's going to step in or not step in. But I have done my part. I can't do any more than that. That's what these women were doing in the field as well.
Why did they take the girl babies? Because they had multiple babies.
It could be they did take the girl babies.
Okay, but why did they take the girl babies and give it to the tribe of Levi who were staying home and were allowed to stay home and let them raise the girl babies?
Even the tribe of Levi were not able to have boy babies.
No,
yeah, it could be the girl babies they did. The Gemara doesn't tell us what kind of babies we're talking about over here. It's likely that it was only the boy babies because the girl babies wouldn't have been killed. They could have raised the girl babies too. The girl babies weren't killed by the Egyptians. So it's possible that it's only referring to boy babies. I don't know.
It wasn't possible that God wasn't going to save some of those boys.
Okay, but you can't rely on that unless it's your only option.
You have to rely on it.
Only if it's your only option. If it's the only option you have.
There's another option. Doing nothing is still an option. But you see that they knew they had to do something. That fish had a, that manna.
So they knew something was happening. Okay.
Yeah, and that it would be, wouldn't have been perfect, but it was going to be pretty okay.
When they put that baby in the float mission down, did they already know that the word for the thing that he was floating in, the same thing as Noah's boat, it's all in God's hands as to where it went. Did they know that at that time?
Teva?
Yeah.
Yocheved and Miriam, I'm sorry, Yocheved and Amram. Amram was the Gadol Hadar. He was the greatest sage of his generation. And Yocheved was the daughter of Levi himself. So you can be sure they knew, they understood these things. Yeah. Yeah, they understood it better than we did.
And the other thing is interesting, God could have grown beef instead of fish. The symbol of fish. So how are we to interpret that
other
peaceful way? They don't
prove the Gemara uses fish always as a symbol of growth. We say v'yidgu larov bekerav ha'aretz. They should be fruitful. They should grow like fish. Fish is to increase and grow.
Like fish.
Right. Multiply like fish. Right.
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 So wasn't that a symbol already of God's hand that they
knew? Yeah. There's no question they saw that Hashem was helping them. The point I'm making is that in order for them to go to still, even though Hashem is helping you, you can't rely on a miracle unless it's your only choice. And if that's the only, they did the best that they could do. And Hashem made them succeed. And that's what happened. Now, yeah.
You kept saying, when we first started talking about that in your book, Shall You Live, I kept thinking it's got to come from your parents. That's where your blood comes from, where your essence comes from. And now going back to what you said now is the mothers leaving their babies in the field. It is the righteousness of those mothers that's causing these babies to live.
That's right.
In their blood they shall live. It's from the generation before them that's leaving them there.
Okay.
That's why I kept thinking like,
now, the Gemara says something else. The Gemara adds this, which many of you mentioned already, which is, B'damayichayi, is referring to right before Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, and He came and He saw that we had no clothes, meaning we had no mitzvos. We had nothing to merit to be taken out. Now, we have a wonderful merit, which is what the women did to make sure the next generation came about. But we had no mitzvah an ongoing mitzvah to do. That was something which was done in the past, which was good, But what would be the mitzvah that we would do that night to leave Mitzrayim, to leave Egypt? And that was two mitzvahs that Hashem gave us, which is Dam Mila, the blood of Mila, of circumcision, and Dam Pesach, the blood of the Karban Pesach, of the sacrifice. Both of which were an incredible self-sacrifice. An incredible self-sacrifice. Obviously the Mila, you're talking about millions of men being Mal themselves, and you're talking about adults. So we're talking about obviously a very, very painful thing, and they all did it. There was nobody who did not agree to do it. And the blood, and then to leave the next day, right after having that surgery. And then the blood of the Karban Pesach, as you all know, was a self-sacrifice because they were slaughtering the deity of the Egyptians. And that they were willing to do that without fear that the Egyptians would punish them for having killed their gods. So these were both mitzvahs that made them deserve to be redeemed. Yeah. King Mendoza, yeah.
She said, so he said, but Hashem can do anything with the vinegar. He expected the vinegar would burn. So it's as if the people did this great sacrifice, but they totally expected Hashem to take them. So it is the expectation that brings the result of Hashem taking care of them.
Right, I agree with you. Right, it's the emuna that they had, but the emuna is that Hashem will help us when necessary. But if we can do something, we have to do it. We can't just throw up our hands. Whatever we can do, we have to do. Otherwise, they could have said, "Look, Hashem will make the children appear out of nowhere." They still had to go through the creating of the babies. I just want to point out, just an aside, only because you mentioned the story, the actual story is, as the Gemara says it, that she accidentally used vinegar instead of oil, and then it was already Shabbos. And then her father said to her, "Don't worry about it." The same one who said that the oil will like instead of vinegar, don't worry about it.
Just going back to the reason she might not have been close to when she was a baby until the point when he passed over the second time was like in the Garden of Eden. They weren't closed until they lost their innocence.
Okay.
During that time, she was still innocent. When she started opening up her eyes and seeing what was going on, that's when she needed to be close.
Okay. In the Nimshal, what the actual story is compared to with Mitzrayim, it's that those kids were still slaves. Hashem had not taken them out of Egypt yet. He had shown his love for the Jewish people that yes, these children will be born and they will be cared for, but you're still slaves. I'm not ready to take you out yet. The time has not arrived for you to be taken out to become my beloved, to become my betrothed. That hasn't happened yet. So they're still there, which is why they're still stuck in that existence. Which means in the mushel that they're still dirty, they're not clothed, etc. When Hashem is ready to take them out of Egypt, that's when all the beauty happens.
My other question was, the Egyptians took babies and put them in spots when the Jews didn't have enough bricks. Where did those babies come from?
Yeah, there seems to be different babies. I don't know that this was all the babies, and I don't know if this was all the women. There were righteous women of the generation who did this. And I don't know, it seems that the ones who put in the greatest effort to make sure to have a baby were the ones that merited that the baby should survive in this way. That's what it seems. I don't know that everybody happened this way, and you're right, there were others that did not happen this way. What is striking to me is that the Gemara is telling us that it is in the merit of these women that abandoned their babies that we were saved. It is in their merit that we were saved. But in the mushel, the abandonment, whatever the word is, of the children is where the mushel picks up. And if you're looking at it not knowing the story of Mitzrayim, then the way you would look at it is some cruel parent had abandoned this child, and fortunately this man came along and discovered this poor defenseless infant that had been cast away by its parents. And now this father comes and takes in the child and raises the child. That's the way the mashal appears when you read it in Yechezkel. But we're missing the perspective of the parent that abandoned the child. And when you read the Gemara, you see that it is actually because of the fact that the parent abandoned the child that Hashem stepped in and took care of us. Because of the self-sacrifice of the mothers who went through all this trouble and then were willing to have the babies knowing that, you know, it's true. It's true. They had Emuna and Hashem. How does a mother abandon a child? Is that an easy thing to do? They didn't know the babies would survive. They certainly didn't know all the babies would survive. They didn't know what would happen. They said, we're doing what we can do, Hashem. Just as when Yocheved put Moshe in the Yamsuf, she didn't know he was going to survive. She said, I'm doing what I can do, Hashem. If you want him to survive, you take care of him. I can't. And that's what they did. And so they abandoned the children with a pure sense of this is my Avodas Hashem. This is what I am meant to do. Whether I get nachas or I don't get nachas, whether I receive this child again or I don't get to see this child again, whether the child survives or not, I am doing what I am supposed to do. And that's why Hashem stepped in and took care of those children. That's what it means, bedamayich chayi, bedamayich chayi. Because of that blood that you are rolling in, that's why you're going to survive. Because your mothers abandoned you as an act of love, not as an act of cruelty. And that's why you're sitting here in the blood. You haven't even been cleaned off. You haven't even had the cord cut. Nothing's been done for you. But because of that, I'm going to protect you. I'm going to step in and take care of you. And that's the mashal in Yechezkel. And then, of course, the reference to the two mitzvahs later. There are all kinds of stories of incredible self-sacrifice that goes on. I've shared some of them with you in the past, and we're over time right now, and I can't move on to that. We did not cover the reference to Avraham and Sarah in the third pasuk. Avicho emori v'imei chitis, and I believe I intend to get to that next week when we move on to pasuk tes vav to verse 15.